Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Yeah, welcome along. Monday Night Rugby. Lots going on. Rory O'Connor of the Irish Independent is here in studio. You're very welcome.
Thanks, Joe.
Let's start with Munster. Good news and bad news. Bad news is Joey Carberry. We'll come to that in a moment. Good news is Johan van Graan is there until 2022. He signed a contract extension.
Yeah.
This was fairly straightforward business, I would think, all round.
Yeah, and it's a bit like Carberry extending himself last week. They've got it done really early. They've got it, you know, they had another season to run. It's usually in the past, these things would have gone until about halfway through next season and there would have been an announcement, but obviously both parties are pretty happy. Van Graan has moved his family over, you know, moved his life over here. He's made a long-term commitment. It's gone well, you know. I mean, he hasn't won anything yet, but, you know, he's in year one. He's really in his first full year. He's got them back to a semi-final for the first time, which I would imagine is probably his KPI. I think anything they achieve in Europe beyond that is bonus territory. I think, you know, if he can keep getting them to semi-finals, the bosses at Munster will be pretty happy, even if the fans probably want a bit more. And they're going well in the Pro 14, and you know, when you talk to players, they are fairly positive about, sorry, that's probably a bit underwhelming, they are very positive about what he has to say. He presents himself very well in the media. Yeah, he's done a good job so far, and it's early days, but I think what Munster really needed, and just reading some of the quotes from today, was it's all about stability and cohesion, because they have chopped, I think Conor Murray's spoken about the amount of coaches that he's gone through in his time at Munster.
Yeah.
Penny was there for 2 years. Anthony Foley was the head coach for 2 years. He was the head coach for 2 years before. Yeah. Razzie came in for a year and a half. So to have another year and a half with another, you know, you kind of need to bed these things in before the person moves on. So, yeah, it gives them a nice bit of stability and it gives them a base to go and try and achieve from.
I saw the Munster acting CEO, Philip Quinn, saying that Johan has put his own stamp on this squad over the last 18 months. And I was thinking about that. What has been the Johan van Graan stamp? I'm not saying he's done a bad job by any means. I'm not saying the jury's out either. He's doing a very good job, and I agree with you that he carries himself very well.
Yeah.
But I just wonder, what is Johan van Graan's Munster
in terms
about?
Of the, I don't think the way the team play varies massively from Razzie Erasmus. I think it is quite a South African style, a lot of kicking. Early on, they seem to be quite conservative for their first 50 minutes of big games before hoping to get ahead. And we saw in that Gloucester game when it opened up, they were really, really good. And he does come with this reputation of being quite an innovative attacker. And we saw a few things when he first came in where, you know, he put Conor Murray up in the lineout a couple of times. In one of the Murrayfield lineouts, he had three backs in the lineout. He's willing to kind of revise the roles of his players. I think there's a bit of a thinker there that he's clearly an absolute rugby nerd. And he's, you know, when you ask him about an incident in a game, he's a bit like Joe Schmidt in that he can go back a long way. But in terms of an imprint of a very distinctive style of play, I agree with you. I don't think we're there. We've seen that yet. But if you think back, I always use Pat Lam's Connacht as a kind of an example of how long it takes a coach to bed in his ideas. So year one, they kind of played, you know, got a couple of nice wins, played a bit of rugby and didn't really get anywhere. Second year, they bedded in a bit further. And it was the third year where you actually saw the full body of work come out. So if that is the timeline, and that's what coaches generally have 3 year stints, it'll be next year before we really see the way he wants the team to play. But in terms of an attacking style, I think in particular, it's where Munster have the biggest room to improve. They're really mean defensively. That's built on a really solid forward pack. I think he and Gerry Flannery have, and JP Ferreira, the defence coach, have really hardened that pack up into something that's quite formidable now. Their front row are really strong in the scrum. Their back five are up there with anything that's in Europe right now. They've got a really solid, like, he's recruited well. And he's one of the things that, you know, no one has left Munster this season. They lost Dunnock Ryan 1 year, Simon Zeebo the next. It's been all retentions this time around. It's a happy squad, it's a happy camp. That's a good thing as well. But yeah, I think from an attacking identity, from saying that's the way Munster attack, I think they're some way off that. And it may be what lets them down in the end this season, because it's been kind of their Achilles heel a little bit. So, but I think it takes time for those ideas to bed in. And I think, you know, they always say defence comes first and getting your set piece right and all. So very solid team. Not opening up teams the way other, you know, their rivals are in the kind of top echelon of European rugby.
And it was a concern against Edinburgh at the quarterfinal stages. They put 45 points in Cardiff at the weekend. Chris Farrell, Jean Klein, CJ Stander and Conor Murray scoring the tries. So, that, you know, on the face of it, it might suggest all is well with the Munster attack.
Yeah, and they are very good against teams they're better than. They are very good. Like, too strong for teams like Cardiff, who were a very good team and came and performed and caused them all sorts of problems on Friday night. But Munster have a pack, a set piece, a game plan that will wear a team down. They win their collisions, and they even the way Keith Earl scored the two tries in Edinburgh showed how ruthless they are when it comes to scoring. You know, but when it comes to actually constructing something out of nothing, that bit of magic that even Treviso managed through their winger in the last minute against Leinster on Saturday night.
Yeah,
I suppose Earls did a bit of that in that quarter final. Maybe I'm contradicting myself, but in terms of creating something, particularly when Carberry's not there, I think they're a little bit of a way to go to that. But that's why they get to this top four in Europe, and that's where the concern sets in about whether they're able to do that to a Saracens, to a Leinster, or to a Toulouse.
Yeah.
Even when it comes to the last stages of the Pro 14, you know, they ran aground against Glasgow in a final, Scarlets in a final, Leinster last year.
Yeah.
When you get into a lot of league company, you need something a little bit different. But if you put them up against 95% of the teams in the Pro 14, they'll beat them on their day, and especially when they're picking their full squad.
Well, that's been the refrain for the last couple of years, really. Tyler Blindell was, by all accounts, very good at the weekend, and it seems Joey Carberry, in the words of Johan van Gran, is highly unlikely to play against Saracens, so they'll have to do it with Blindell at 10. Interestingly, Alan Quinlan was on OTBAM on Friday. This was before Blindell played very well against Cardiff, and he had this to say about, Munster's number 10 for the next couple of weeks anyway.
See, Arthur, our best out half?
Potentially, he could be, you know. There's no doubt about that. He has
after
the ability.
Who? After Carberry and Sexton.
Right.
Well, there's...
Jack Carty just been...
That's my question. Yeah. That's my question.
No, you can't just say, Jack Carty and Ross Bourne have been superb and they've excelled and improved a lot. Is Tyler Blindell capable of being in the mix and going past either two of them? Of course he is. He's a very talented player. I think 2 years ago he had a really, really consistent season. It probably ended in a bit of disappointment in that Saracens game in the Aviva where they lost the semi-final. But throughout that year he was superb. Really, really good tactically, and his ability to attack the game line and bring players either side of him and just bring other players into the game was second to none. He's obviously struggled a lot since then, and you know, when you have a neck injury like that, it's going to take a long time to build back up strength and all that kind of stuff. And he's looked jittery at times this season, let's be honest about it. But just to come on last week and to have a moment, a kind of a period throughout the game, to get the conversion and control things really well and do a lot of good stuff last week, it'll do him the world of good. So to answer your question, he has the ability to do that.
Mm. So Blindell, where is he on this long return from very, very serious injury?
I think the moment where you kind of realise that he's properly back and playing with full confidence is when Reece Marshall overthrew that line out in the Munster-Edinburgh game, and it was Blindell who rushed up and threw his body on the line and won that ball back in the build-up to Keith Earl's try.
You think if he's unsure of his body, he doesn't go in there?
First couple of times he played, he looked a bit cagey going into contact. They did pick him at 12, which meant he had to carry it a bit more than maybe he would at 10. Maybe that was just to build up his confidence in his body. They rewarded him with a new contract, and there was a lot of talk that he's going to take on a bit more of a coaching role. He's almost been like a coach behind the scenes, an additional attack coach apparently, and you know, he's the water boy when he's not playing. Yeah. He's on getting messages. Apparently he is the best rugby brain in the country almost. Everyone raves about how smart he is. Conor Murray said they joke about it behind the scenes that he's going to he'll go and coach the All Blacks, you know, that they may have a future All Blacks coach in their midst. He's like massively highly respected for his what they call the rugby IQ, for want of a better phrase.
Because I remember in that 17 season, Alan Quinlan's referencing there the Saracens defeat in the semi-final. Tactically, he managed that year very, very well. There was one game at Thomond in particular where he was stunningly good, and people were saying it's no one's managed a game for Munster like this since O'Gara, the intelligence of it. And then obviously he disappeared. But I didn't realise we were talking that level of rugby intellect.
Yeah, so they say, you know. I mean, I've never actually interviewed him. I haven't come across him on the beat, so I don't know him at all. But the way people talk about him is very impressive. He's come through the same school as Dan Carter, New Zealand under 20s, Crusader, Munster. Like Rob Penny tried to get him, didn't work out. Anthony Foley got him a couple of years later. Like the connection had been made. He was brought over to play for Ireland. He was a project player in the same way that some work out, some don't. But I think he was seen as one that really, because there's not the depth of the out half is never that strong just because of the nature of the position and how difficult it is becoming at top level at half. You know, Joe Schmidt had him in camps on the back of that season, and then again his neck went again. And you know, when you hear the same injury, you start to worry. And even the talk when he got that new contract about how that it was almost a semi-coaching role, you were wondering how involved he'd be. But right now, he looks like he's confident in his body, and you know his ability hasn't waned at all. And he looked, you know, any player like that who's come close to the end and his back, he looks like he's really reveling in the opportunity. And right, you know, it's a good time to be a starting player in big European games. You know, it's a good time to, if you're going to time your run, this time of year is the time to do it, because you know, if Joe Schmidt's picking this World Cup wider squad based on form, right now he's got to be close, especially with the concerns over Johnny Sexton and Joey Carberry missing games. He's more experienced than Jack Hardy or Ross Byrne.
Yeah. It's interesting, sort of come from nowhere in that respect.
It's kind of a forgotten man thing. Yeah. I mean, you know, a year and a half ago, if you're doing your depth chart, he would have been right up there. You know, especially when we saw him, pictures of him in the Ireland gear in camp, it was almost like this guy's a live contender. And I think everyone thought that ship had sailed. It seemed like his body had given out on him. But it's great to see the reward for it. He's obviously put an awful lot of hard work into getting it right, and the Munster medics and all that as well. So,
okay, interesting.
Especially if he comes back against Saracens and leads them to a semi-final win after how badly that one went 2 years ago. It was one of those big games where you can see a guy a bit like Sexton in Cardiff, you know, lose it on the pitch and lose it. You know, it would be nice to see him guiding through that. It would be a pretty nice redemption story.
Yeah, it was a big reality check 2 years ago. Mm. So in Parma, Munster did Connacht the favour by beating Cardiff.
Yeah.
In Parma, then it was Zebre 5, Connacht 6. One for the purists.
Yeah, well, I only saw bits and pieces. I must confess, saw bits and pieces of it. But
Zebre missed three kicks.
Lost the last two over there.
Yeah, they haven't won in a while.
So
Andy Friend was giving out about the referee who was making his debut in the Pro 14 and was talking about, you know, we had five penalties in 10 minutes, 10 meters out. There wasn't a card. We weren't allowed to play rugby. But they got out of there just about.
Yeah, away from home. Poor conditions, you know, these are things that, this is when, you know, when Andy Friend calms down, and I think you look back on that as, you know, that's overcoming adversity and you know, fighting the elements, fighting the ref, and coming away from, you know, Zebre's not necessarily the most difficult place to go, but they found the going tough there. And
I think, to be honest, that was his general sense even leaving there immediately. Like, we just needed to win and get the hell out of here, and it's all about Cardiff next
Saturday. Especially with Cardiff losing, and Munster did him a favour by even denying him a bonus point. I mean, Cardiff scored three tries, I think, and, you know, had chances to get a fourth, and Munster defended really well. So all roads lead to Galway this weekend. I think it's the biggest game of the weekend. And really, for year one of Andy Friend's tenure, given how, even in the Pat Lam's final year, things were pretty down there, and then the Kieran Keane era was a real nadir. It would be amazing for them to get back up and running like that. They have their starting 15 plus subs when they're at the strongest are well more than capable of getting a result. I think we saw when they went over and rested a few over in Sale a couple of weeks ago that they don't probably have the depth to compete on two fronts like that just yet. But it was that's a gritty one. That's the one that they wouldn't have won last year, that they can mark down and put it to bed now and focus on this week's performance.
So clearly they want a quarterfinal, they want Champions Cup qualification. If they beat Cardiff this weekend, that leaves them in a pretty strong position, I would think.
They're true. Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, okay. It's done because they put the distance between themselves and Cardiff, and the Ospreys have fallen away. So I'm just looking at the table here. Yeah, they have enough, and then they go to Munster. Probably, you know, they're not in Europe anymore, so they get weekends off. They go to Munster for final game of the season. And they probably can't catch Munster, so they can rest up there and put everything into a quarter final, which will be away from home against possibly Treviso, possibly Ulster.
Both winnable.
I don't think both winnable. Yeah, both. They'll give it a good shot anyway. And then, you know, if they get to a semi final, probably against Leinster, that they, I may have miscalculated that, but that, you know, that they're in bonus territory. Then I mean, I think it will be a real achievement, and it gives them a bit of budgetary room that maybe they can go and get a player or two for next season, and you know, it just makes life a little bit easier for Friend as he builds into next year.
Yeah.
So look forward to it.
Huge Philip.
They won the league in the last World Cup year, you know, that they don't tend to get a huge amount of players at a World Cup. That is a real opportunity for them next year, especially if they can build into it that way. So yeah, it's big for them.
Yeah. Glasgow and Ulster were both licking their wounds, obviously, after the weekend before. Glasgow beat Ulster 30 points to 7 on the Friday night. And then Leinster 27, Benetton 27, the other game you wanted to touch on. So I think just Scott Fardy and Luke McGrath survived from the Ulster game. Clearly, Leinster have games to spare here. That is what's going on.
It's a weird one. You know, Munster played pretty much the same 23, give or take. A couple of injured players. Because they've so much to play for, and really, for Munster, this is the start of next year's European campaign. Because if you know, the better you do in the Pro 14, the better the scenario is in your draw next year. Plus, you give yourself, you know, potentially like Leinster have a weekend off around the final time, and because they skipped those quarterfinals, that's really huge if you're fighting on two fronts. So Munster would love to get there. Now Ulster couldn't do them a favour against Glasgow, and you know they're 3 points adrift. It's going to be hard for them to rein in Glasgow in. But for Leinster, they're in this really weird scenario where they're resting players. They're obviously probably going to basically keep one team training just for Toulouse this week and then put out another team for the Glasgow game, which doesn't matter to them because they've already put themselves with distance, and then hit the ground running next week. I hope that those 2 weeks of training do the trick. So it's, it's going to be a weird one. Like last year they lost these games and it didn't seem to affect their momentum. They lost to Treviso at home, they lost to Connacht away, they were really annoyed. But when they got out for their first team, they were fine. But I'd say there's a couple of players there that are just kind of looking forward to their summer holidays because they're playing these games and they know they don't really matter.
Yeah, and you're seeing the likes of Max Deegan, who got man of the match, getting game time, even Scott Penny at 19 years of age. Another St. Michael's graduate. I was really starting to keep track of all the St. Michael's
just assume
graduates.
I think your first assumption should always be they went to Michael's at this stage.
Just tell us if they're not St. Michael's going forward. So look, he's only made his debut last November, but geez, he's got speed. That's always an attractive thing in a young player when you see him burst on the scene. I presume for Penny to be a World Cup boulder would be quite something, but Max Deegan must be thinking about it.
Well, Max Deegan's the same class as James Ryan, Jacob 22. Stockdale, Andrew Porter, and he was the World Player of the Year that year. So he's got to be looking at those three having kicked on, and Jordan Larmour from the year below him, thinking, hang on a second, you know, I was the cream of that crop.
Do we know why Deegan hasn't kicked on?
I think Ryan was probably built for, I think those three players were almost built for senior rugby straight away. It's taken Deegan a bit longer. He's in probably a more crowded field at Leinster.
Increasingly, you know, less though.
He's still playing when he started. Exactly, they're dropping like flies. So suddenly, he played against Saracens in the quarterfinal last year for a few minutes, so he made his European debut in that game. He's probably making a more normal transition to senior rugby than those three freaks, you know.
Where's this 22-year-old been?
Yeah, exactly. And Conor O'Brien's from that crop as well. There's kind of the second wave of that team is coming through. He is talented enough to go anywhere and do anything. I think he's an unbelievable athlete. He's a converted centre. He scored a try last year. It was one of the most athletically gifted tries I've seen, where he claimed the ball over a defender, I think it was against Edinburgh, and touched it down from a mid-air leap. You know, it was incredible stuff. When he's confident and he's firing, he's just one of these dominant players. He can be anything he wants to be. And now he's cleared a few out of front of him. He's got Doris coming up behind him, who's, you know,
played as well.
So he was the big star of last year, and probably needs a break because he's been on the go for a long time. Penny is still under 20, so he'll go to the under 20s World Cup unless there's a call from somewhere to say we want him for something else. I think it's unrealistic to think that he's going to make that step.
Probably is. I guess the reason I throw him into the mix is Deegan is more of a 8 and trying to increasingly become a 6, isn't he?
Yeah.
Whereas Penny is a 7. Where are we in the 7 scale?
Oh, we're light. Oh, yeah, Ireland are light. So. And Van der Fleer says he'll be back in time for the World Cup pre-season game. So that's, like, he was the one who started against the All Blacks. So now that, particularly now that Dan Levy's gone, he's the number one, I think. And O'Brien has a huge amount of work to do to kind of get back to where he wants to be. We know his ceiling is massive, but he's far off that ceiling now.
Jordy Murphy, I think, has racked up 14, 15 games for Ulster, and we know Joe Schmidt likes him.
Yeah, he's definitely in the mix, but, you know, has he done anything outstanding? Have Ulster, I think he's got a lot of game time there, and he's done well, and he's definitely got the versatility. He's a lot in his favour going into a World Cup squad, so he'll come in. You know, he's definitely ahead of Penny and Deegan and these players. I think Rhys Ruddock is increasingly becoming a player of massive interest. I think, you know, he has started at 7 for Ireland against South Africa and beaten them. He is durable, he is strong, he is all the things that you want going into that game that is looking like the one that will define the whole routine. But as out-and-out sevens go, not a lot of them.
Is it your sense against South Africa you don't need an out-and-out seven?
I wouldn't say you don't need them, but I think, you know, when you're going horses for courses, your size matters against the box. So he's definitely, I I'm increasingly coming around to the idea that Ruddock will go, and I think Ruddock was just kind of badly timed injury. I think he would have had a much bigger role to play in that World Cup, in that Six Nations campaign. You've also got Standers packing down at seven a lot these days. We talked about it last week with that back row of Omani six, Conan at eight, and Standers kind of, they're playing left and right, so there's that option as well. So okay. I think he's playing with it. So yeah, I think we're way off
Scott
Penny
Penny's
going.
Away a bit off,
he's unbelievably talented. He'll definitely play for Ireland if he stays fit, but it's just a matter of when.
Just to touch on, by the way, over in the Premiership, it is quite extraordinary what is happening to Leicester. I mean, for much of the season, you're saying, well, it's going to be fine one way or another. So they enjoyed their ninth defeat in 12 matches of the weekend. Exeter put 52 points on them. I saw Mike Ford linked up with them as a consultant and then watched them duly concede seven tries against Exeter. So they could slump to the bottom of the table if they lose next game up against Newcastle. Jordan Murphy's, I mean, welcome to coaching.
Yeah.
This is tricky.
Careful what you wish for, I guess.
You kind of still presume Leicester, almost just by dint of tradition, will find a way out of this. They have they had seven internationals in the starting 15 against Exeter at the weekend.
Well, Harlequins and Northampton Saints have both gone down with strong squads, so it has happened before. You know, Leicester are Leicester, but they've fallen so far from that Aristocrats level that we all kind of grew up with Leicester as one of the kingpins of Europe with that unbelievable pack. And you watch the way Exeter went through them at the weekend, and you just think they should have just let Tuilagi go to Racing and just invested all that money into a tight five worthy of the name, because that is not a Leicester Tigers pack that's just getting bullied at home by Exeter. You know, they can follow the Exeter model, you know, unglamorous signings, but you know, players of international quality who turn up every week for them. They've lost the essence of what Leicester was, and that's a very intangible thing that I've just said. But if anyone understood the Leicester dressing room, surely it's Jordan Murphy. Then you've backed him, but then you've brought in the outhalves dad as his kind of consultant slash potential replacement. Ford generally lasts a couple of years and then leaves under a cloud. Like that's an interesting appointment. You wonder how that dynamic's going to work, but they're just they look like a kind of a Edward Man United kind of scrambling around for fixes. They don't look like they have a clear strategy. They don't look like a club that knows what it's doing, and yet they've this big stadium, this proud history, a big crowd even turned up for that extra game at the weekend. There's so much potential there. And they're still able to hang on to the best player in England under pressure from Racing. So
I was thinking, could things be that grim behind the scenes if Tuilagi's looking at 750 grand from Racing and saying, no, I'm happy where I am, things are good here, but they don't look to be good there.
No, it looks like a really just negative environment. It looks like they need to win this Newcastle game and get to the end of the season and draw a line under it. But then this is part of a progression. It's been downhill the last couple of seasons. They've kind of clung on in there in Europe, but they've never, Munster have been over there a couple of years ago, knocked them out. Ulster knocked them out this year.
Is there any kind of general accepted reason as to why things have gone so badly? Is the old, beating the lard out of each other on the bus in the professional era, it's kind of an outdated model now.
Well, I think on reflection, the decision to part company with Richard Cockerill when they did looks like a really bad decision. Okay. Cockerill, we can see from the evidence of what he's doing at Edinburgh, clearly, he's maybe old fashioned, but it works, and he was going through a bad patch. They kept picking attack coaches that didn't really suit the way he wanted to go about it. They just don't seem to have a cohesive direction. Obviously their success in the 90s and 2000s was based on an unbelievable collection of players. The market has changed, new players have come in, Saracens are the big players, Saracens get all the best young players, Saracens have all the internationals, they're bulk suppliers, and there's another model that Exeter have put together and come from kind of the lower regions and come up, and Leicester have kind of been left behind, and they've kind of gone in the direction that Bath have gone as well. They were the two dominant forces pre-professionalism. So no, there's not one specific thing. But I think those old fashioned methods that got them so far probably are outdated. But I think there's more to it than that. I think there's a lack of direction and strategy there, I think, from the outside looking in, that really just needs a bit of a reboot. And maybe relegation is the best thing that could happen to them, because it gives them a year to figure things out. Like Harlequins got relegated a point to Conor O'Shea and won the league within a couple of seasons. It's a massive financial hit, and for a club that relies on gate receipts and doesn't have a big benefactor, to my knowledge, that's going to be difficult. But it could be an opportunity to clean house. But I think none of their players have relegation release clauses, so they're going down with a massive wage bill, and they're going down with an unbelievable squad that will get them back. But you can be sure they're not going to be voting against ring fence in the Premiership anytime
soon. Yeah, I heard Matt Dawson talking a couple of weeks ago. He was saying, as he understands it, there's no relegation clauses there because no one really thought it was necessary to worry about that.
Yeah.
Suddenly there they are. And then finally, one last piece of news. Guy Noves, people would have seen he was looking for compensation for a wrongful dismissal. He was sacked in 2017, won 7 of his 21. He was looking for 2.88 million. He's received €1 million in compensation for wrongful dismissal. It was hard to understand, was he sacked without any compensation whatsoever, or was he given some compensation and merely wanted them to pay up the whole contract? It was hard to know the ins and outs of it.
Yeah, it often is with French rugby. It's difficult. It's a murky world.
If rugby's gone down the route of, well, we're now sacking people mid-contract, then you're going to have to get used to paying up those contracts.
Yeah, absolutely. I think
it's a celebration in any Premier League manager's house when they get sacked after they're due.
They could do it a couple of football executives moving in and kind of teaching them the ways, I think. Yeah, It's hard to believe that he did such a bad job and can walk away with so much, but I suppose we shouldn't be surprised given everything we know about professional sport. But you know, when you think of governing body, how much that money could be put to better use in a country where rugby is so popular and yet so unsuccessful at the top level. He's done well. Nice retirement package for Guy at the end of a long career.
Yeah. So there you go.
We should touch on the sevens as well, Joe.
Completely forgot the sevens. Yes, sorry, excuse me. I actually went to start with the sevens and then almost completely forgot. So people would have seen this. Good man, thanks for doing my job.
We'd be killed.
Yeah. So Ireland, I've seen different reports that they're one of 15 core teams. I've also seen one of 20 core teams, but certainly they're one of the core teams in next year's seven series. They beat Hong Kong yesterday morning, was it yesterday?
Yeah, yesterday morning,
28-7. They beat Germany in the semi-final. They came through the group. Obviously, they lost to Japan in the semi-finals last year, which was fairly heartbreaking. And they are in for a fun year, as much as anything, those lads.
Yeah.
And this Sevens programme, kind of relaunched in 2015, Anthony Eddy spearheading it, is proven pretty successful reasonably quickly, you'd have to say.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're back to where Ireland should have been in the first place if the IRFU had not tried to ignore that Sevens existed for almost a decade. And Nusa Fora came in and changed all that. And in fairness to him, and Eddie is someone who's taken a bit of stick for the women's, and you know, I think he deserves some criticism for that. But he's clearly, you know, his experience in Australia, I think, comes a lot from the Sevens game. He's clearly got an expertise there. The women have been part of this of the series for the last couple of years, on and off, and they got relegated and got back in, and now the men have made it. And really, when you look, you know, whenever you watch Hong Kong or Vegas and anything like that, I was always very frustrated there was no Irish team there, because Ireland has the depth of player that if they had the right investment, they would get there. And they should have got there last year. They'd admit that themselves. I think they lost to Japan, unluckily, and kind of ended up back in the sticks of the seven circuit playing in tournaments that they were too good. Even when they went, they were invited to play in London and in Paris, and they came third in London at the end of last season. So they're clearly good enough. Mm. They were the best team in that qualification tournament by a mile. They let a massive lead slip against Uruguay and were lucky to draw it. When they kind of switched off, but they're all really good players. And even though there's not a huge amount of financial reward involved in playing for that team, if you're young, good at rugby, and not quite, you know, and on the fringes of a professional setup, what better way to spend your year traveling the world and playing rugby, and you know, and getting the exposure? Like Jordan Conroy, all the commentators all weekend were saying this guy is going to be an utter, like, he's going to join the Carlo Niles, Perry Baker school of the superstars of the Sevens game, which is a whole new market that really Irish people haven't been paying attention to because there's no Irish team there. I think people would be surprised by how big this has gotten. And they've got a tough route to get to the Olympics, but potentially they can get there as well. That's their next goal. They're already talking about that. Billy Darris,
how many qualify for the Olympics? Is it 12?
12. Japan are there automatically, the top four of the circuit, and then the six regional tournaments, one of which is Europe, which is one Ireland will go into, and then there's one left over for a world repechage for the best of the rest. So
a few
European ones going to be tough because France and the UK or GB will be in that, and then the best of the rest will be tough as well. But they've beaten England before. They've proven themselves on their invitational, on their invites, and I think they'll go into that as one of the coronations and will be instantly competitive because they're way too good for this qualification tournament. They should have been in this years ago.
You mentioned Jordan Conroy. He hit 36 kilometres an hour, I saw.
Yeah.
Top speed. Usain Bolt,
has hit 44 kilometres an hour.
It's not bad, is it?
Yeah, well, he wasn't playing rugby at the time.
No. Like, Isles is the one that everyone points to. He's the guy, you know, former US, he was in the US finals for the qualification for the Olympics, you know, gave it up and went in. And Conroy, you know, was playing for Buccaneers, and Sevens offers players who maybe don't have the skill set or the body shape to play 15s, because 15s has become such a big man's game.
Yeah.
You know, Billy Dardis, a school superstar who everyone thought was going to be the next of the Leinster production line. He did a really good interview with Keane Tracy in our paper on Saturday about how it didn't work out for him and how this has been his backdoor into kind of a professional life, and it's given him a new lease of life. Dan Levy's brother Adam laid on the try for the winning try.
Yeah.
You know, there's all sorts of stories in there. It's great that they have this avenue. Like, there's players there who've been playing AIL at a decent level for a couple of years and have now got an opportunity to play in front of packed stadiums.
Well, that was my next question, because you look at the list of the team, I think it's a 13 or 14 man strong team, and they've got the likes of Buccaneers beside them in brackets.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure where are these playing AIL? Are they in Leinster Academy trying to come through? Are some of them just seven specialists?
They're increasingly becoming seven specialists. Like, Adam Byrne, Rory O'Loughlin, a couple of others have passed through the sevens
setup. Rob Balakoon
was in it as well. So, yeah, I think, I mean, he you can see why. He'd be sensational at it. And they're going to have to probably draw on that pool a little bit more next year, because I think it'll take up, I think they lost two players during this tournament, so if they were playing again next week, they would probably have to dip into the academies a little bit more, because there's a supply there. But there's players there who like Mark Roach was at Connacht, having won the AIL with Lansdowne, but was kind of on that. Mick McGrath is there as well. He had a couple of years at Leinster, played for Clontarf. Kind of players that kind of fall between the professional and the amateur game. He would probably the strongest AIL players, but not quite good enough for professional contracts, or who got to go.
And so, excuse my ignorance, are there lads just playing sevens exclusively around the country?
I think when the sevens finishes, they're available for their clubs, but there is increasingly, I think, a group of players that certainly in the women's game there is, that they're all based out of Lansdowne Road, and you see them training. If you're down in Lansdowne during the day, there's always a group of women sevens players training. I think the men's players will play AIL when they're available, but
increasingly, we might see sevens.
Well, next year,
teams.
Well, they're going to have to employ a couple of sevens. I would imagine. I haven't spoken to anyone in the RFU about this, but if you're going to be playing that many tournaments and be away from home for that long, like, they're already getting something to play there. They're going to have to get something more regular. I would imagine sign them up.
So, I presume it's not ideal to be playing 15s and then hopping into sevens and back into 15s.
Depends on your position. It depends what you're doing. I remember hearing about that your body shape you need to be lighter. You need to be quicker playing sevens, and you know, for obvious reasons, but you're also not going to be available. You know, we saw with the clash of the women's, the players being pulled out of the Six Nations.
Yeah.
They just don't really match up in terms of the year. So I think the clubs will probably be lucky to see them as much as they have done when they're on the road a bit more. So, but
okay, good stuff.
Yeah.
And is that your plan, to be the sevens correspondent on tour next year?
Well, yeah, I'm certainly putting my hands up, but we'll see how the budget goes.
Okay, that's Monday Night Rugby for this evening. Get your comments in for the Heineken Star comment, and we'll get to some of those on Wednesday, and each Friday we choose a winner. And that was our rugby coverage, brought to you by Vodafone. Team of us, everyone in.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball
with Vodafone. Jeez, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.